Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by Career Management Associates. I'm David Chulo. It's about all things in the human resource world. We're going to bring in local, regional, and national guests, and we're going to talk about a variety of topics and explain why human resource management is critical to your business success so that you can make decisions to keep and retain great talent.
Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by CMAcareer.com and Verrill-Law.com. I'm your host, Tani Alvarez, and today our guest is Carla Fowler, MD, PhD, and founder of Thaxa, a boutique executive coaching firm that leverages the best ideas from performance science to help leaders around the globe. And today, she and I are discussing the top five fallacies of goal attainment. Welcome, Carla, and thank you so much for being here with me today.
Hi, Tani. It's great to be here.
I'm actually really excited about this topic, Carla, because you and I have had a conversation already about goals generally, about achieving goals, about ways in which our goals change and evolve over time. And I am pretty sure that I'm going to walk away from this episode with a number of new theories and ways in which I can both work with my team members and myself on goal attainment. So thank you so much for being here, because your background, the work that you do, I think is going to be highly valuable to our listeners today.
Oh, thanks so much for that.
So I often like to make sure that our listeners they're thinking to themselves, Tani, why did you invite Carla to be on the show? What is it about her that makes her the person to talk about this issue? So can you give our listeners a little bit of background about yourself and kind of how you get to being the founder of Thaxa? And then we can spend some time talking about Thaxa more generally, but first a little bit more about you.
Sure. Obviously, what I have been doing around executive coaching with performance science is not always what I had been doing. And if we go back far enough, the sort of common thread in all of this is that I've always been really interested in human performance. And I obviously didn't think about it like that in fifth grade. It was more like, oh, when someone is really good at their social interactions, like they're popular or something like that. Like, why is it that they are good at that? Or if someone wins the track meet, like, why did they win the track meet? What was it they did? What were the behaviors? And so I think this has always been going along in the back of my mind as how I approach all situations is I'm always observing and thinking about that. And it might not come as a surprise that I am a total math and science nerd. Like I have a brain that just is continually observing and asking these kinds of questions and that also really likes problem solving. And so ultimately I took a path through academic medicine. And so this is one of the big sort of surprises when you look at just different places I've been over the course of my career. And so what that means is that I went to medical school. I also during that time went and got a PhD. So it took about 9 years. And this was after my undergraduate time. And, you know, I did that, number one, because I thought the ability to use science to help people, like very tangibly, like make people's lives better, was very appealing to me. But there was also a lot of problem solving. Like science is a big puzzle. You walk into the lab every day and you have to figure out an answer that people don't know. The other interesting thing about these environments that might be clear or not is just that they were competitive, like high performing arenas. And so one of the things that I found myself doing continually was putting myself into those situations. Like I found them to be very exciting. And also I found that I learned so much. It was not comfortable.
Yeah, no, I mean, like, definitely looking at your resume, this isn't some situation where we're looking at big fish, small pond type thing. You definitely put yourself into situations where you were around, and I don't want to use the word competing with, because I think sometimes we focus in on that too much, but that you were surrounded by other extremely high achievers. And when you go back to kind of your experiences in fifth grade of looking at individuals and saying the why and how, It's interesting because instead of taking that data and then using it just for yourself and kind of putting yourself, I don't want to say in a position of power, but in a more senior role, you then put yourself in this position surrounded by all kinds of other people who are the best and brightest at whatever they're doing to then continuously see what that looks like.
Yeah, that's great description of what it was. And it wasn't just that, like, I was on the outside, you know, observing and taking notes like a good scientist, but there's a lot of data you get from actually literally putting yourself through it and then asking, like, what did it take? What helped me? What didn't? And I'll add, simultaneously, in a totally different arena, during that time, I've always been an athlete, and I was sort of living my dream on the side of, if not being a professional athlete, being a world-class athlete. So I played Ultimate Frisbee very seriously for that 10-year period, and we went and won multiple national championships and a world championship. And so I bring that up just as in a, like, outside of the thought realm, like in the athletic realm, it was another place that I said, okay, there are principles in this realm too. Some of them actually overlap with what we're seeing, like, more in my professional life. And so I went along. Ultimately, a lot of people say, okay, well, then when did you make a pivot? How did that happen? And the short story on that is just, you, in medical school, once you're done, you have to go into residency. I chose general surgery in part because, perhaps not surprisingly, it is one of the more competitive specialties in medicine, and has a lot of both physical performance elements to it, as well as a decision-making judgment performance that's required. You know, when you operate, it's a very binary thing. You do it or you don't. And that decision making ahead of time then becomes the crux. It is one crux. The other crux is, of course, if you decide to operate, then you need to do it at the best of one's ability. But ultimately, what I realized was that within medicine, there wasn't enough space, like when you're actually out and practicing it, there wasn't enough space to really be thinking about all of the elements of human performance that I wanted to be. It's our healthcare system is under pressure and under stress. So that is a whole topic we could spend an hour on, but we won't.
I was going to say, we could definitely do another whole topic just on that, more generally.
But, you know, you really have to ask yourself, is this what I want? And we're going to come back to this idea later. Does this really, like, doing this for the next 40 years, is that really what I want to do? Is it the fullest expression of myself? And is it where I think I will reach my highest potential? And the answer, unfortunately, was no. And of course, that's a very awkward time to be making that decision. But, you know, sometimes something's clear. It's really hard. It's uncomfortable, but it's clear. And so, you know, the only way forward is forward. And so, so I finished my year, but I let them know so they could fill my spot. And then I actually, like, in taking everything I was fascinated by and saying, could I make a more potent version of this for myself to create value for people? And that was really in the coaching realm. And so this was 12 years ago. I left residency. 11 years ago, I started my practice. And as a piece of that, what I wanted to do was not just say, okay, I'll go to a coaching program and I'll do that. Yeah. I'll get certified and then I'll coach. For me, a big piece of the draw was to say, we have all this science around performance. And that's really what I want to work with people on. Like, when they have ambitious goals, they are leading big teams, like they're growing a startup. That's what I want to do. And I want to help them really practically apply and use all the great ideas we have that they might be too busy to, like, necessarily go find on their own, and or that they may be, it's just a noisy field. And so the role of an interpreter and someone who can dialogue and thought partner with them to pick from the field what's really going to help them, given their strengths, their weaknesses, their personality and style, and the goals they're going after. And so part of the draw was to design a methodology that would let me incorporate and really build the performance science into the methodology as I was working with leaders. And so I have been iterating on that method ever since. It's been 11 years now, and I'm still, as you can tell, very excited about performance science.
So the FAXA is kind of different from a lot of other executive coaching because it's really focusing in on that performance science aspect of the things that I don't want to say we're all doing, but I mean, it's based off of data and methodology. So either what we are all doing, what we're not doing, and we should be, but that kind of data, is that fair to say?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I think that leads us more to kind of today's dialogue more generally. And for those of you who may just be joining us, you're listening to HR Power Hour, and we're talking to Carla Fowler, MD, PhD, and founder of FAXA. And we're discussing the top five fallacies of goal attainment. And Carla, what I want to talk about kind of more generally is what those five things are. And then throughout the course of the rest of the episode, I want to jump in and talk about them in much more detail, what that awesome. Looks like, ways in which we can be mindful and either maneuver, sidestep, pivot around them, whatever word you want to use. So let's start with, what are the five fallacies of goal attainment?
Awesome. Well, I think number one is we don't actually know what we want. So we often say, I have a dream. I know what I want, Carla. But we actually need to translate that for it to be effective. So that's number one. Number two is we try to do it all. So we're going after our goal. We try to do everything that could help us get there. And instead, we really need to be assuming from the start, we absolutely will not do it all. And so we actually need to approach it differently. The third fallacy or big mistake is we want to, or we think we need to know it all before we get going, when in fact, we often need to get going to actually know what we need to know. Number four is that we confuse knowing something with doing the thing. So this is, we often know best practices from performance, but actually, in fact, that is very different from whether we are doing them consistently.
I think that the diet industry would 100% agree with that one. I mean, how many times has everyone said like, oh, you know, I know that if I exercise more than the calories that I take in, that I'll lose weight. But we have an industry that's built off of people who want another way around that. So four, I'm really excited about because I can see myself kind of in there. And then what's the fifth one, Carla?
And then last one, number five, is that sometimes getting great results is not enough. We actually need to make it visible to other people.
Well, as I said at the beginning of the show, I'm super excited because it's clear that I'm going to take away a bunch of stuff from our conversation. And those are always really exciting shows. Let's jump in on that first fallacy that you mentioned. And I presume we're not looking at them in any order. It's not like, ooh, here's the number one kind of thing. But
oh, yeah. That's a great point. These are all important things. You could start, if you are a listener and you hear one that just speaks to you, do that. Like you don't necessarily have to start with the first one. Yeah. So again, I'm a big fan of build momentum where you are with what's useful and then work your way through.
So let's talk about that first one, that a dream isn't enough. What does that mean?
So I think one of the challenges about how our brains work is that we can have a sense of sort of clarity about a thing. Like we might spend a lot of time thinking about it and imagining it and all of this. But the challenge is that when dreams are existing in our brains, they don't have to obey any of the laws of the physical world. So for example, they don't have to take into account that we have to all have 24 hours in a day and none of us get more. The people who are producing really amazing results, they still only have 24 hours in a day. You know, there's gravity, there's, you know, things that happen. And so one of the challenges is we can feel like we really know something and want something in our brain, but until we take the time and put in some effort into saying, what does it look like to translate this into the real world, into my life as it is? And certainly some things to go after a dream, like we will need to change some of our reality. right? We might need to say, I need to watch less Netflix and I need to spend more time like studying up on this degree I'm getting on the side, you know, to improve my career prospects. But I think one of the most important pieces is that people often are like, no, that's no fun. Like, it's no fun when I start to put it into reality. And yet that is the work. And I think we sometimes don't think about thinking as work that produces like a tangible outcome. But what I know is that stage of translating the dream, even if it looks really different in your reality, even just to get started on it, is a critical step. And so what that looks like is sitting down, often with a piece of paper. You could also talk it out loud, like into a recorder. I mean, we're not, the form factor here is not the high performing piece, just to be clear. But what it does when we have to put it into language, suddenly when we use words, we get a lot more concrete. We have to say what it is and what it isn't. Often, like I like to describe, what would it look like to be successful? And then, you know, sometimes the first thing we write down, we're like, that's actually not very realistic. Like, you know,
the mansion, the sports cars, all the things.
Well, or like, I've never run a marathon before and I want to like place top in my age group. Like, that is something you could accomplish. But sometimes it's helpful to say, well, what might a moderate step like along the way look like? Maybe the first thing is be successful at running a marathon. Like, try that first. And that is a huge accomplishment as it is. So what does success look like? Another thing I like to have people sort of put some shape to or translate it is like, why is it important to you? What are all the different reasons that it might be important?
I think that's a super important question. It's actually, I want to take a pause here because I want everyone to kind of think for a second. It's time for us to take a quick break, but I want to return to it after the break because I think the why is so important in this dialogue. So we're going to take that quick break. Anyone who's joining us, you're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM and WLOBradio.com. We'll be right back.
At over 150 years old, Verrill has an illustrious history with more than seven generations of legal expertise. With more than 130 attorneys across seven offices from Maine to Washington, D.C., Verrill serves clients across the country and around the world. HR professionals, business leaders, and in-house counsel count on Verrill as one of the premier labor and employment law practices in the Northeast. Contact Verrill at verrill-law.com. That's verrill-law.com.
As the list of compliance challenges for businesses continues to grow, it's time to think about your payroll vendor as someone that can do more than just pay your employees. I'm Chris Clough, president of Paper Trails. We're a team of fun and local experts purveying convenient, high-tech payroll and compliance services across New England. Whether your business is struggling to stay compliant with an earned paid leave law, you're worrying about retirement savings programs, or you have questions about your state's paid family medical leave, Paper Trails has the team and tools necessary to allow you to handle the work while we handle the paperwork. To learn more about Paper Trails and how we can help your business, visit papertrails.com/HR Power Hour.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com and Verrill-law.com. I'm your host, Tani Alvarez, and today our guest is Carla Fowler, MD, PhD, and founder of Thaxa, a boutique executive coaching firm that leverages the best ideas from performance science to help leaders around the globe. And today, she and I are discussing the top five fallacies of goal attainment. Before the break, Carla, we were talking about that first element, that a dream isn't enough. And one of the things that you had just started talking about is that why question. Why is it the goal? Kind of, we talked about different steps in getting to a goal, but let's talk more about the why.
Yeah, well, I think one of the things about the why is that if we don't have clarity on a why that really resonates with us, then we often don't make progress towards a thing. And we don't always know why. It often manifests itself in, well, I just don't feel motivated, or I sort of put my energy towards something else. But there's lots of whys, and there's not a correct answer about it. It's more that often it does need to be sort of intrinsically motivating for yourself, like inside yourself, not related to other people or what other people think. But like, sometimes it's okay to do something for other people, but it still comes from like a sense of ourselves. Like, for example, if we were like, you know what, I really need to exercise more. I have a family and I want to make sure like I'm here for a long time, like for my kids. And so I know this is an important piece of my health. Like, that can still be for you, even when it is in service of others.
And it's interesting because this goes to the same topic that you mentioned, you know, just briefly earlier about what are you willing to give up? And I think that was one of the other topics that we're going to talk about later. But I mean, they all kind of then build into each other, because the why, if you're spending 15 minutes scrolling through whatever social media you enjoy, like that might be your decompression time, but there's still the same amount of time in the day if you use that walking and scrolling, or if you, and I'm beast, everyone be totally safe. Please don't walk and scroll unless it's safe. But those types of like whys, what is important to you? Is it sitting kind of doing that scrolling, or is it scrolling and learning a new language, or is it, you know, reading a book in that scroll, or exercising?
Yeah. Well, and the last thing, and I think this leads into number two pretty well, is I like to have people, or even myself, like write down, what is the time you are willing to commit to this? And where will that time come from? Literally, will it be in the morning? Will it be before work? Will it be after work? Will it be during your lunch break? Where are you imagining that comes from? And that's not to say you won't have to tinker with that along the way and see what's working, but I think it's a question that becomes very important up front to help translate.
No, because my answer every single time is going to be like, there's a magic fairy, and like that extra 15 minutes is just going to appear. And that's one of the reasons so often I, you know, will admit that I'm not super successful in being like, oh, I'm going to learn a new language, or I'm going to, because I just think this extra 15 minutes is just suddenly going to appear. And maybe that leads to kind of exactly what you did say, which is an issue with me thinking that I can do it all the time. So let's talk about that second fallacy of trying to do it all.
Yes. And this, we have so many cultural influences that again, social media, what we see on social media, also like our brains, does not obey the laws of reality. Like, we have no idea what those people who are posting, who make us feel like, wow, they get so much done. Like, it is possible they do. But the point is that we don't know the backstory of like, did they spend all day getting that one perfect picture of themselves? Yeah. So we don't know how they're using their time. And that's important, but it can make us feel like everyone else is doing it all, and so we need to do it all. When in fact, I think the highest performing people are brutally focused. And so this comes to this thing of, we should actually start from the assumption, no, you will not do it all. And that does not mean you cannot be successful at your goal. What it means is that instead of trying to figure out what productivity tool will make us doubly effective, or how we can multitask our way to it, or just like put our heads down and grind and like work 18 hours a day, rather than attack the problem from that angle, we want to say, what are actually the things that really drive my progress towards the goal? Not all the, even the fun stuff about it, or the like dotting the I's, crossing the T's of it, the detail, the weeds. It's to say, no, what are the fundamental drivers? So just as an example, if you want to run a marathon, one of the fundamental drivers, you got to run. There needs to be time to run. Are there different strategies for how you train? Absolutely. But from a fundamental perspective, you would need to be asking yourself, when is it that I will spend time running? Or a different example might be, you want to become a more confident public speaker at work. You will need opportunities to practice that. And maybe learn about it. And so one of the things that we do then is we say, how do I spend time, or how do I work on researching and thinking through the problem of what's actually most important for me to get to my goal? Not all the stuff like I might see other people doing.
Yep.
How do I really focus that list? And there's a couple ways to do this. Like, one great way is actually, if you know someone who's really good at a thing, go talk to them, ask them what was actually most important you did, or looking back, you know, what gave you the most impact and really brought you along. Another thing is many goals are things that people have done before. They've written about them. And so you don't even have to read a book, although you could. You can go online. But when you do your research, the key thing is don't just look at one resource. Look at like three different blog articles and then say, what are kind of the common themes? And then the last piece I say is use your common sense.
No, and like, I love, like, you know, it's so funny when you say like each of these things, because I'm way behind in the times. I'm not cool, but I just started baking sourdough, and it was something awesome. That I didn't do during COVID at all. Well, there wasn't enough flour anyways, so it was good that I didn't get on that bandwagon. The flour appears available now, but I did look at, you know, I've looked at three or four different recipes, and I'm taking like bits and pieces because I'm like, that makes absolutely no sense. So do this final one. But in the common sense part of it is where I'm really laughing, because sometimes you'll read a blog and you'll be like, that makes no sense at all, even with how little knowledge I have about this subject.
Yeah. Well, and here's the thing. Pick the things that you think come up again, like as these common themes, and also like pass your common sense meter.
Yeah.
And start focusing on those, do those things. And then as you go along, and we're going to get to this in number four or number three, rather, you will learn some things and you can make a change. But the key is don't start trying to do it all, because what happens is we burn out and we don't get results. We dilute all the time we could spend across enough different avenues that nothing we really do is quite successful. Even if any number of the things, if we had just focused on those, would have made us have progress. So that is number two.
A question that I have that I think maybe relates to two, but might lead us into three, is kind of when you mentioned going and using other resources, whether it was a book, internet, those types of things. What are your thoughts on using internal resources within your organization, whether that's other people? And that might go to what, you know, your third element is of we don't need to know it all. What are your thoughts on using resources that may be within your organization? Is that positive? Is it negative? Should we be looking outside of an organization if we're attempting to refine a skill set?
I think this is requires some personal judgment, but I'll tell you how I might make that decision or think about the decision. One of the great things about internal resources is often they're free. So like, that's a great deal. The other thing is there are moments in your career where it's actually, and this goes to number five, really helpful when other people see you investing. So for example, like earlier in your career, like sometimes what we say is when we see someone, or when we were the person who is like really going after improving ourselves and people are seeing us change and make progress, that can be a really positive thing, yeah. Right? They see that about us. Sometimes the reason that one might not pick an internal resource could be something around privacy, for example, or just even our own sense of confidence. So if we thought that our concern about what other people would think, or really wanting to give ourselves space to totally like fall on our face, get back up, try it again. And yeah. If we felt like we wouldn't be able to fully immerse ourselves in a learning experience because of some embarrassment or worry about how that might appear to other people. And there are some reasonable like things to think about on that. Yep. But again, it's kind of a personal judgment thing. So that's how I'd make that decision, is ask yourself, like, can I take full advantage of this? Do I think there will be any impacts? Like, if not, go for it. But also there's plenty of resources outside that are also free.
No, that's great, Carla. So it does kind of lead us, I think, a little bit into that next element of when we believe that we know it all, or that we need to know it all, that we need to know it all to take that first step. Let's talk a little bit about that fallacy.
Excellent. That's a great lead in. So sometimes we recognize that this is happening for ourselves because we are in like analysis paralysis, or we are like planning and prepping all to get started, but we never seem to start. And so the thing is, absolutely, it's worth doing some homework before we get started. There are so many low-hanging fruit that sometimes just make us more confident or kind of set us off on the right direction. And so I'm certainly not opposed to that, and I do encourage it. The key piece is that there comes a point when what we're trying to do is use research or prepping or planning to answer questions that those things cannot actually answer. So there are always going to be uncertainties, and that we actually need to be experiencing those and really getting going in order to understand what we didn't know and what would be worth knowing. And so I think that one of the key pieces is you can, when you're starting something, I like to sort of, even before you get started, like write down what you think you might want to know. And just make that first list. Like, what would seem like a reasonable couple things to know before you got started? And you can even write down, all right, if I got started and then turns out I didn't know something big, like, what would the downside of that be? Like, would it be anything bad? And usually it's not. And so then you can go and use that list to direct you to those topics, do some research on those topics. And then once you've done that, like, you can sort of say, now is the time when I need to at least start something, like go do the thing, try the thing, sign up for the class, like something that really takes a little more action. And that way, that's one way you can prevent yourself from being eternally in planning and prepping. You can also set a start date. That's another way to handle this.
I mean, all these things, I think it becomes clear, like, when you're focusing on that prep work, I think we focus so much on the prep work of the idea or of the goal, as opposed to the administrative prep work of what's my timeline for this, or what questions do I need to answer in stage one to go to stage two, as opposed to, you know, your research chain starts and then you get down another rabbit hole and another rabbit hole, and you realize this concept is so big, but it's only so big because you've made it so, so big. Yeah. And then I feel like the larger the universe is, I mean, think about it. If we're talking about public speaking, so something that would be, I don't want to say easy, but okay, here's a finite, you know, I want to be stronger at public speaking. Are you going to watch all presidential debates? Are you going to watch the great, you know?
There's a lot of rabbit hole there.
Yeah, no, exactly. Like, what are you going to look at? And when you put it in that concept, I think it makes it actually even more manageable, because before you, I mean, taking many of these concepts of what have I written, like writing down what do I want? What does that look like? How much background am I doing before I start or put it into practice is so important. But you're spending all that time thinking about whatever the goal is and then failing to acknowledge the administrative, maybe. Do you have another term for what you call it? Kind of the prep work for getting there.
Well, and I think those words are great. They're all different ways, like people might use different words. So this is why it's great. We're using all the words, like sometimes it's prep, sometimes it's the admin, sometimes it's the research, but these are all forms in which people can get stuck. But what they're stuck because actually usually there's the uncertainty, and it's more of a, what if it doesn't work out? Or am I really ready? Am I really ready to make it successful in the first go? Rather than just saying, of course, I'm not ready to make it totally successful in the first go. It might still be successful, but like, that's sort of not the point. The point is to get moving. And so what you can do also is say, here's the stuff I'm going to do before I actually like get into the area or the space or get started. And then 1 month in, I'm going to, or it could be 2 months in if it's something you're not doing super frequently. At that point, I'm going to revisit what are now the new questions that have been raised in my mind. Because often, if you just go do something three times, you will suddenly be like, oh, like, here's the gear I actually need to do this thing. Or, oh, here's actually what's the difficult part of this. I should go practice that a little bit more, and then go back to the whole activity, right?
Like, all of so, this. Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah. Such important points, and kind of the way you're breaking it down, it is so, so very helpful. And I think it's actually a good time for us to take another quick break and then jump into the fourth and fifth elements, because I think they're going to tie into the things we are just discussing. So with that, you're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM and WLOBradio.com. We'll be right back.
Educational HR Radio is critical to your organization's success, and our sponsors understand the value this program brings to owners, C-suite professionals, and the HR community. We are honored to thank our sponsors for their support and contributions to this program. We thank the law firms of Verrill, Jackson Lewis, and Sheehan Finney, along with our partners, Paper Trails and Strategic HR. Want to be the next sponsor of the HR Power Hour? Text 603-303-6124 and say HR Power Hour sponsor.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis, as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's jacksonlewis.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com and Verrill-Law.com. I'm your host, Tani Alvarez from Verrill, and today our guest is Carla Fowler, MD, PhD, and founder of Thaxa, a boutique executive coaching firm that leverages the best ideas from performance science to help leaders around the globe. And today she and I are discussing the top five fallacies of goal attainment. And we've gone through the first three, Carla, talking about that a dream isn't enough and how we kind of direct ourselves in figuring out what that next step is. And this belief that can get in the way of thinking we need to know everything before we even get started, and different solutions or ways in which we can break that fallacy. Let's talk a little bit about confusion between knowing and doing, and how that plays a role in us obtaining our goals. And when you listed it earlier, you know, that's when I jumped in and I said, gosh, you could kill the whole diet industry and health industry with some of these concepts, because we learn in third grade or fourth grade, like, hey, the way our bodies operate is, you know, calories in and exercise out and that kind of stuff. But tell me a little bit about that confusion that we all seem to experience when we're trying to achieve a goal.
Well, I think one of the things that happens is people know a lot of great habits. And fortunately, the internet and social media have really exposed us to all sorts of things that people are doing: productivity systems, morning, like magic morning rituals, all these things. We laugh, and I'm not saying that there are not effective things about those. But the challenge is we often... someone will be like, yeah, what should I do? And I might say something like, oh yeah, I know that. And what they're really looking for is they're saying, no, like, what's the new magic thing? What is the shortcut? What is the hack that I am not aware of that everyone else must know? And that's just what I need to become high performing or to obtain my goal. Yeah. And what I always say about this one is that we don't need a new idea. I think many people have great ideas already about how to build a new habit, how to go after a goal. The problem is that we're not using a good idea we already have and using it consistently. Instead, we're doing all this search for, really, like, we're looking for a shortcut. We think there is something that would be better, that would make it easy, that would save us from the discomfort of starting at zero or one and trying to go to 100. And I think one of the most important things we can actually do is wrap our heads around, like, we have plenty of great tools, and where we need to focus our energy is on applying them consistently. And so, you know, one of the of the models I use for this is I call it the 90-90-90 rule. And it's just about our human nature. And sometimes when we hear this thing that happens to all of us, then we're like, oh, that's how it works. I know there's only a couple ways I fail. So that helps me understand how to be successful. And the 90-90-90 rule is that honestly, 90% of people don't get started on their goal or the thing. And of the 10% that do start, 90% of them don't actually keep going on it long enough. So they don't sort of figure out how it fits into their life and their schedule enough to even just do whatever they decided to do first, like consistently. Like, let's say someone was trying to get in shape, be a little more fit, exercise, whatever you picked. Maybe it was walking. That's fine. But just to figure out and do it long enough without quitting to know how it really fits in your schedule. Now, we know that like walking may or may not take you to your goal. So the last 90 is that, well, the people who keep going and they don't quit too soon, 90% of those people don't ever iterate or change over time what it is they're doing to make it more effective. And so that last piece, that third 90, is really about saying, oh, I've now been walking consistently for 3 months. And now I think I might need some extra stuff to help get me where I need to go. I'm wondering if that is like adding some lifting weights, build some strength. I think, from what I've read, that might be a place to focus some energy on. Okay, I'm going to take a couple of my walks and turn them into meeting with a trainer. So that's an example of someone saying, well, let's try that now for three, like walking plus weights and see where that gets me. Again, there isn't anything all that fancy about the number one, one step at a time, get started, do something, stop planning and prepping, do something. Phase two, just keep going. Don't worry too much about perfecting it because often people quit because they try and like iterate too soon before they've really just said, this is the thing I do now. Like I spend this hour every day and I go walking. Then give yourself a third stage, but don't rush stage three at one. That's often we're trying to figure out stage three. That what is what keeps us from starting. And don't try and get perfect or like too soon. Don't like iterate too soon or you sort of are all over the map and you don't have a clear habit. And so again, this is a tool. It's simple. It's not fancy. Everyone's like, Carla, that's obvious.
No, but I mean, it's so interesting. Yeah, I mean,
because that's the point of this one.
Yeah.
We don't need a new thing. We just need to not confuse knowing a bunch of things with actually doing anything.
And kind of that acknowledgement that like once you're in that third 90, right? I think if we look at it from a corporate perspective that we're at that's the way it's always been done here mentality. And then saying like, but it could be more effective. Like you've now created this habit, but what's a way that you can even improve that habit even more and exceed the goal? Because you and I are talking about like ways in which things can like interfere with reaching a goal, but there's also kind of that availability of exceeding a goal. And the only way likely it's going to happen is in that third step of kind of evolving where you're at and what you're thinking.
Well, and you brought up something so important, actually, and this happens in corporate systems, it happens in personal habits, where we get really comfortable with a habit. And that is a good thing. It means we are outdoing something, but it means we often have to leave that comfort slightly to do something new and different. And this is absolutely true within corporate settings. Change is hard.
Yeah. Being uncomfortable isn't fun. I mean, very few people walk around saying like, ooh, I love being uncomfortable or, those type of things. So being in a comfort place, whether or not it's emotionally because they're people who you enjoy being with, or it's tasks that you feel very confident in, but that's not in most cases, a place where we're growing and changing and evolving and meeting goals.
Yeah.
It's interesting because the first time that we're airing the show, it'll be the beginning of February. So for those listeners who had wonderful New Year's resolutions and who already have found that they've fallen off the wagon or not on track, as they're kind of moving forward and thinking, okay, well, we don't have to just start on January 1st. You can always start a goal at what any.
There's nothing magical about January 1st, folks.
No, exactly. But well, tell all the people who create all the glitter clothing that, because I think that's their big their big sales time. How are ways in which, I mean, mentally, is it just like wake up the morning and say today's the day? Or have you found people who just are still struggling with that? Like, okay, I failed once. How do I restart?
Yeah. I mean, one of the really important things is beating yourself up about something is not making progress. It does not help you. It doesn't get you what you want and generally just makes you feel crappy. So I think that's thing number one is it's not very productive. I think number two is now is always a great time to get started. Like, and that people feel so much better after they do something. So you may find yourself, oh, I'll do that later. I'll do that later. And I like to have the mental answer of, I'll do it now. So when you say, I'll do it later, to say, like, I'll do it now. In fact, not even like, no, I won't do it 4 hours from now, but I'll do it in 10 minutes. Like, literally, there is now. Now is the only time we have any control over. And so that's how I really think about the power of right now and why it is very different from saying, I will do it later. So we only have the ability to take action in any given moment.
And with that, I mean, we're going to take a break right now. We're going to take a break right now and then come back and talk about that fifth element. So you're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM and WLOBradio.com. We'll be right back.
In today's highly regulated climate, customized HR solutions are needed more than ever. Career Management Associates can partner with your existing HR department for projects or even serve as your outsourced HR team. From compliance and compensation to investigations and employee relations, CMA provides you trusted HR solutions. Call 207-780-1125 or visit cmacareer.com.
As the list of compliance challenges for businesses continues to grow, it's time to think about your payroll vendor as someone that can do more than just pay your employees. I'm Chris Clef, president of Paper Trails. We're a team of fun and local experts purveying convenient, high-tech payroll and compliance services across New England. Whether your business is struggling to stay compliant with an earned paid leave law, you're worrying about retirement savings programs, or you have questions about your state's paid family medical leave, Paper Trails has the team and tools necessary to allow you to handle the work while we handle the paperwork. To learn more about Paper Trails and how we can help your business, visit papertrails.com/HR Power.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com and Verrill-Law.com. I'm your host, Tani Alvarez from Verrill, and today our guest is Carla Fowler, MD, PhD, and founder of Thaxa, a boutique executive coaching firm that leverages the best ideas from performance science to help leaders around the globe. And today she and I are discussing the top five fallacies of goal attainment. We've spent the last four, gosh, probably 50 minutes now, Carla, talking about the first four fallacies. Let's spend a few minutes talking about that last fallacy, that results aren't enough. And there's a part of me that's like, wait a second here. So I definitely need more information. Tell me what you mean by that.
Well, this is a concept from a book called The Formula. Author's name was Burr Abbasi. And but the idea behind it is that when we are performing and when we want to be successful at something, that there's both the results we're producing, and then there is like what is our networks or the community that is relevant? What is their perception of our results? Now, in areas that are really easy to measure and understand who is best, this matters less. So in athletics, for example, it's pretty clear who won Wimbledon or who ran the fastest time. It's easy to measure. And so you are often successful if you can produce the results, in part because it's easy to measure. In most of our lives, like in our careers and in the business setting or the corporate setting, it's much harder to sort of assess things and put numbers to it. Some fields are easier. Sales is a great example of this. But when it is harder to measure, it becomes more important to our success what our community or our network knows about what we're producing. And so we can't just have results in many environments. We also have to make them visible. Yep. And so a great example of this is to say, if you are leading a team and you are like kicking butt and doing lots of great things, one of the important pieces is also to make sure that, for example, like your boss or your skip level have a sense of like, what is the value you're producing? And it doesn't have to be like the brag show. It often looks like, you know, showcasing your team who yeah. obviously produced a lot of that value. But it's also helping people understand for the future, what could you help with given what you've already accomplished? How could they lean on you or use you in new and different ways? And so it becomes important that, again, they know about it. And a key piece, people are like, but don't, of course they must know about it. And I say, no, like we as people are very self-focused, each and every one yeah. of us. They have tons of busy things they're doing too. Yep. It's not because they're ignoring your results. It's just not as obvious as we think it might be. And so again, sometimes results are not enough. We need to make it visible.
But, no, I love that. Yeah. And in my mind, it's kind of like tree falls in the woods. No one hears exactly. it. Did it make a sound? Or, and then even some of the sports stuff, it's interesting. Like if you're a golfer and you get a hole in one and no one else watches the hole in one, I mean, is it a hole in one? The golf community might, you know, disagree when you don't have a witness and those or type of things.
Right. Or even just let's simplify it to a normal thing. How different is it when you're with three of your buddies and they all see you make the hole in one and then they're talking about it for yeah. years and then other people hear about it? Like, it's really different if you do it by yourself and then you're like out at drinks or whatever with folks and you're like, yeah, I got a hole in one. And they're like, oh, okay.
Yeah, like, no, exactly. You know. No, it's a good way no. to describe a concept that at least initially I was kind of like, huh, I don't know. But Carla, thank you so I can't believe we're at the end of our time together, but thank you so much. This has all been really, really helpful to me. I hope to our listeners as well. If our listeners want to reach out to you or connect with you, what would be the best way for them to do that?
So a great place to just learn more about performance science and all the conversations that I'm having about it is LinkedIn. So that's a great place to follow along. And then if you want to connect, a great place to do that also is on my website. So lots of great resources there. The website is thaxa.com, T-H-A-X-A. And yeah, I've got podcasts up there as well as, you know, frequently asked questions and other resources.
Right. Carla, thank you so much for being a guest today. I really appreciate it. And all the time that you've spent sharing all this really great information with us.
Oh, thanks, Tani. It was a pleasure.
You've been listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM and WLOBradio.com. Thanks for listening and we'll see you next week.
Thank you, everyone, for listening, and catch us every week at 10 a.m. on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM or 1310 a.m. and streaming live at WLOBradio.com. Podcasts of this show and every show are available at HRPowerHour.com. Have a great week, everyone, and remember, HR management is critical to your business's success.